Welcome again to the Business of Kush, the cannabis business podcast, where your host, Chip Schweiger, the Greenleaf CPA, and his guests talk about all the business side of the cannabis industry, including accounting, finance, investing, and news of the day. If you're a cannabis business owner, investor, or industry insider looking for the dopest tips to make more money, improve profits, and increase the value of your cannabis business, you're in the right place. And now, here's your host, Chip Schweiger.
Hi, folks, and welcome to this week's episode of The Business of Kush, the podcast where you get one actionable tip each and every week to increase the value of your cannabis business. For our regular listeners and subscribers, welcome back. So great to have you here again this week. And if you are a new listener, a very warm welcome to what in a short time has really become one of the top cannabis business podcasts out there. So if you found yourself here for the first time, you're in great company. Once again, I'm your host, Chip Schweiger, the Greenleaf CPA. And if you've listened before, you know that I'm that guy who's made it his mission to see you and your cannabis business grow. Each week, our goal is to support you by bringing 28 years of experience in public accounting and corporate finance to you, the cannabis entrepreneur. So I created this podcast with you in mind, and we set out to bring you tips and tricks to make more money or build a more successful cannabis business. We also do our best to support the continued federal legalization of cannabis in every state and for every adult. And speaking of that, as I'm sure you've seen, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer finally introduced legislation last week to end the 60-year-old ban on marijuana. Yep, that's right. I mean, after promising it for a long while, and as recently as 420 talking about it once again, it kind of feels like we've been having this carrot dangled in front of us. While cannabis industry leaders were gleeful over the milestone, it's probably a long shot that the legalization bill will actually become law, but we're going to touch on it more later in the show and what could happen even if this bill isn't passed. Also, New York regulators have approved regulations governing adult-use cannabis sales. The rules formally adopted by the Cannabis Control Board ensure that the first round of dispensary licenses go to applicants with past cannabis-related convictions, which I think is actually pretty cool. So we're going to unpack that and the nuances of that and what they're doing in New York a little bit later on this show as well. But first, as our industry continues to mature, and especially if we can get some sort of safe banking protections out of Washington, one of the dynamics at play is the continued involvement of investments from family offices, from venture capital, and especially from private equity. So this week, I thought it would be good to talk about what cannabis entrepreneurs should know about private equity. And I think it's really important because at some point in your company's future, you're going to want to take chips off the table and go sit on a beach. Or maybe you simply will have gotten this business as far as you can take it, and it's time to focus your attention on your next venture. Either way, you'll likely be looking at it being approached by either a large MSO or by private equity. Now, I've worked with private equity firms and portfolio companies and prospective investments for the last, nearly three decades. And I've seen every type of situation and every type of firm. And so I think this talk is going to be really important. And we're going to try to talk about the important concepts that I think you should know. But let's pause for a minute and get the definitions right. When we talk about private equity, we're talking about investment funds generally organized as limited partnerships that buy and restructure companies. More formally, private equity is a type of equity and one of the asset classes consisting of equity securities and debt in operating companies that are not traded on a public stock exchange. And since we really don't have too many plant-touching companies that are able to register on U.S. public stock exchanges, private equity has become a more attractive option for those looking to make investments and for those looking to get investments in the cannabis industry. Now, before we get started, let's also address something. There's a common misconception that private equity firms are only interested in taking advantage of companies and turning their investments around for a profit as quickly as possible. And like any sweeping stereotype or myth, this is true in some cases. While unscrupulous PE investors do exist, this zero-sum view of the industry is really kind of out of touch with reality. I've also talked before about financial buyers whose main goal is to buy companies to fix them and then combine them with other companies and then resell the whole thing at a profit. Not necessarily unscrupulous if you understand what the goal, but understand that that's just the way their business model works, but it also doesn't help with the myth. The reality is, in most cases, private equity firms have the same interests as their portfolio company that they acquire. Efficient, sustainable business growth, which is so important as we continue to build out the cannabis industry's ecosystem. At its core, the private equity ecosystem has investors who want a return, and the funds and the private equity firms have the job of creating those returns. This is why the private equity industry isn't just a boon to the companies themselves. It's a powerful engine of economic growth, particularly during an economic downturn like the one that we seem to be in right now. And they have the capital to do it. At the beginning of 2020, during the beginning of the pandemic, Main Street private equity firms had a record $1.45 trillion of capital available for investment. Now, as cannabis companies continue to struggle with drastically reduced cash flows, especially in mature markets, and uncertain recovery prospects, private equity firms are uniquely positioned to offer them crucial support. Talk to experts in the field of private equity, and they'll tell you that there's a strong proof that the private equity industry played an important role in getting the U.S. economy going again as we came out of the Great Recession. The facts are clear on that, and I believe, and we are already starting to see it, that this will be the case again as we come out of this downturn. So let's talk about three important takeaways for you related to private equity from my experience working in this ecosystem. Yes, most of these are from mainstream industries, but you know what? What has worked successfully for consumer products companies and agribusinesses and mainstream manufacturing will also work well for cannabis dispensaries and cultivators and processors. Our industry is very unique, and that's the cool part about working in it. But in a lot of ways, the same economic and financial truths that hold true for every business will help cannabis entrepreneurs build valuable and profitable companies. In fact, that's at the core of the value proposition behind my firm. And it's to take tips and tricks from the mainstream world and apply it to the cannabis industry so that you can build a really profitable business. So here's the three things. Number one is private equity helps companies navigate through economic crisis. So here's the facts. Private equity-backed companies don't just outperform other businesses over time. They're also better equipped to handle an economic shock like the one caused by COVID-19. According to a 2017 paper published by the National Bureau of Economic Research, companies that had private equity support during the Great Recession maintained their investments at a rate of 5 to 6% higher than those that didn't. Private equity-backed companies were also able to better attract lenders while the cost of servicing their debt was lower. And I've talked before about the value of having your debt load be manageable, especially in our industry. So another fact. During the recession, private equity-backed companies saw an 8% increase in market share over other companies, as well as greater growth in the stock of their assets in the years after the crisis, which helped them recover more quickly. And here's where it really makes a difference. During COVID-19, many private equity firms tightened their focus on supporting existing portfolio companies and their thousands of employees with cash flow projections, assistance on safety, logistics, and human capital, and the development of a post-pandemic recovery plan. Now, the goal here seems to be to ensure that portfolio companies come out of the pandemic stronger and better able to handle a new environment, whatever that may be. The number two thing that I think is important to understand about private equity is that private equity firms and their portfolio companies are on the same team. Although some founders are wary of private equity firms, most firms are built around healthy relationships with their portfolio companies. Business owners really have a strong desire to sell to those private equity firms they believe are going to respect the business that they've built. And it makes perfect sense. You spent your life's work building a business that's not only given you a good living, but also something that you can take great personal pride in. Well, private equity understands that. After all, they're people too. And as many reps as they've been through, they know that the best investments are the ones that have mutual benefit to them. After all, not all investments are in the stratospheric $100 million range that we hear and read about. they're often closer to $20 million or $30 million, which has a dramatic effect on cannabis business owners and the communities you serve. Another way to say it is when portfolio companies flourish, private equity firms flourish. This is why so many private equity firms want business owners to stay at least for a while and maintain equity in the business. Decades of data demonstrate that private equity firms can help portfolio companies outperform their competitors, which means they can improve the overall prospects for a quick and robust economic recovery. And the most successful private equity firms are capable of supporting their portfolio companies with more than just cash. They're partners who help companies use their resources more wisely, improve their cultures, rationalize their processes, and develop their leadership. And the number three item that I think is important for you to understand about private equity is that private equity is a vital part of the economy and the capital markets. So between 1998 and 2017, job growth for all businesses in the United States was about 24.7%. But the number of jobs created by private equity-backed businesses increased by almost 60% over the same period. Now, the difference in sales over this time frame was even more dramatic. Just under 29% of all U.S. businesses, but over 103% for private equity-backed businesses. And I think it's pretty clear that private equity is a critical sector of the economy. And that really goes against the myth that I spoke about before, that private equity firms simply buy companies and sell them off in pieces to make more money. In my experience, that's just not the case. Contrary to the all too common view that private equity firms take over companies and immediately sell them to make a quick buck, the evidence actually demonstrates that they actually focus on sustainable business development. Now, I regularly attend a private equity breakfast once a month with private equity firms, service providers, and companies interested in the private equity environment. It's kind of a private equity college fair served over breakfast. And one thing that I hear from almost every firm that presents is that these firms are interested in long-term investments. The hold periods have gotten longer before selling, and in many cases, private equity funds make investments into the company with no intention of ever selling. Private equity really has become an alternative long-term investment strategy for many family offices and wealthy investors, and those are the investors that you want and need in your cannabis business. Buy it, fix what needs to be fixed, and then hold it for long-term gains and dividend income. After decades of surging job gains and investments in companies that outperform their non-private equity-backed peers by actually a huge margin, it's clear that the private equity industry has become integral to the modern economy. And we're on the forefront, especially if we can get safe banking, of it being an important part of the cannabis industry as well. So to sum it up, my advice here is to really do your homework if you're a founder talking with one or more private equity suitors. Look for the firm that you believe will be a good partner to you rather than just merely an investor. Ask also about their experience dealing in the cannabis industry. I've said it before on this podcast, but the best practice I've seen from successful companies who have done it right is to think about partnering with a private equity firm long before you intend to. Learn all you can about that firm by talking with other portfolio companies. Develop the relationship as much as possible before the transaction. Get your books and records in order and be patient to find the right firm for you that will not only maximize what I call CIF, cash and fist, but will also care about your people, your culture, and your company. It simply takes time to do it right. Now, maybe you've thought about a future with private equity firm, but have questions. And if so, drop me a note at chip@thegreenleafcpa.com, and we'll help you sort through it to decide if it'll make sense for your cannabis business. Okay, let's get to our last segment, and that's the one that we call News of the Day.
News of the Day.
Okay, our first news article comes from MJ Biz Daily. Well, really, almost every cannabis news outlet. But the headline reads, Federal Cannabis Legalization Bill Introduced in the U.S. Senate. That's right. Legalization to remove the decades-old federal ban on marijuana was at long last introduced last Thursday by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Now, as I mentioned, most marijuana lobbyists give the Schumer's Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act, or what they're calling the CAOA, almost a zero chance of getting through the Senate, since it would need 60 votes to pass. But several have said that it could lend momentum to a more incremental reform bills, most notably the Safe Banking Act, which would allow banks to serve cannabis businesses without the fear of federal reprisal. It really does increase the chances of getting something done. And this is what Randall Meyer, who is the executive director of the Global Alliance for Cannabis Commerce, said about the legislation. And he's really looking at it as having an uncorking effect for the marijuana legislation. Schumer and his colleagues, including Senators Cory Booker of New Jersey and Ron Wyden of Oregon, have been working on the 296-page measure mostly behind closed doors since the early part of 2021. Now, a draft of the bill was circulated last year, and when Schumer, Booker, and Wyden released the bill last Thursday, they said, quote, "The question today is no longer whether cannabis should be legal. Many states have already made that decision on their own initiative. The question is whether cannabis should be subject to the same high regulatory standards that apply to alcohol and tobacco," end quote. So according to the synopsis from Schumer's office, the new bill would A, remove marijuana from the list of federally controlled substances, yay. 2, allow states to continue taking the lead on regulating this industry, but also maintain their prohibition in states that have not legalized. And 3, or C, if you're keeping track, establish a regulatory regime similar for alcohol and tobacco from the federal government. Now, a variety of industry trade groups offered feedback last fall on changes that they'd like to see in the measure, including lowering the proposed national marijuana tax rate, which was partially implemented in the newer version. In the newly introduced bill, that does have some notable revisions versus the draft document. For instance, the bill still includes a 10% national tax on all marijuana products for the first 2 years if the bill becomes law, and that tax would gradually ramp up to 25%, a provision that staunchly is opposed by marijuana trade groups for obvious reasons. But in the newer version, that tax rate will only apply to larger cannabis businesses, quote unquote, while the excise tax for small and medium-sized producers would only be half that rate. So it would start at 5% and then ramp up to 12.5% over that 5-year period. In my mind, though, the very real question about all of this is, will anything happen this year? The introduction of Schumer's bill could spur more political wrangling behind the scenes to get some type of cannabis reform passed by the end of the year. And this is really what several industry experts are saying, even if the majority leader's bill itself winds up being tabled. Historically, a large number of bills approved by Congress in the past decade have been accomplished in the month and a half of what we call the lame duck session that follows the midterm elections in November and that also precedes the new Congress, which will convene in January. And that window often leads a lot of compromise deals, and the Safe Banking Act could be one of those deals, riding the political momentum that Schumer just created with the introduction of his bill. Now, Amber Littlejohn, who many of you know, is the executive director of the Minority Cannabis Business Association, said she believes there are signals within the bill's text that Democratic senators like Cory Booker, who have long objected to safe banking being passed before marijuana-related criminal justice reforms, that those bill's texts have he could realize how important access to capital is for small and minority marijuana companies. David Mangione, who is a spokesman for the National Cannabis Roundtable, also agreed that the bill's introduction ups the odds for safe banking. So that's the positive I see coming out of all of this. Look, the reality is the bill is likely dead on arrival in its current form. But the more we have folks in Washington talking about cannabis and marijuana reform, the more chances that something positive comes out in terms of decriminalization or banking reform. And as they say, if you never get up to bat, you never get a chance to hit. So we'll see how this shakes out. Okay, our second news article comes to us from Cannabis Business Times, and the headline reads, "New York regulators approve regulations governing adult use cannabis sales." So the New York Cannabis Control Board approved regulations last week that will ultimately govern the state's forthcoming adult use sales. Regulators formally adopted a licensing program on July 14th that was initially proposed earlier this year to ensure that the first round of dispensary licenses go to applicants with past cannabis-related convictions. And this is according to New York Daily News. The regulations mandate that applicants for the first set of conditional adult retail use dispensary licenses must provide proof that they or a family member have been convicted of a cannabis-related offense prior to New York legalizing adult use last year. And this is actually pretty cool if you think about it. These applicants must also have a minimum of 2 years' experience in owning a profitable business. The online application portal is expected to go live next month, according to the New York Daily News, and that the New York Office of Cannabis Management will post the launch date on its website at least 14 days before the application window opens. So the Cannabis Control Board Chair Tremaine Wright told the Daily News that this is a tremendous, I'm quoting him now, this is a tremendous stride in the right direction. We're leading with equity in the state. And in fact, New York Governor Kathy Hochul announced that the state's Seeding Opportunity Initiative earlier this year was to prioritize the most impacted by the war on drugs in the adult use cannabis licensing process. 100 to 200 licenses could be issued this fall, the Daily News reported, with adult use sales expected to launch by the end of next year. Regulators have already issued more than 200 adult use cannabis cultivation licenses to date, according to the news outlet. And the CCB also approved changes to New York's medical cannabis program last Thursday. So, and that includes a streamlined patient registration process and revised packaging, labeling, marketing, and advertising rules that align with the regulations in the adult use industry. So, exciting times for New York. And I'm looking forward to really supporting all of you in New York in any way possible as your state continues to open. Hey, quick question for you. Are you liking what you're hearing on the Business of Kush? Well, if so, please consider dropping us a note at our website at bizofkush.com. Now, if you do go there, you'll see that we've got every episode with the show notes and a place for you to ask questions or provide feedback on what you'd like to hear more of. This show is for you, so if you're stuck on something in your cannabis business, let us know and we'll help you dig into it. So head on over to bizofkush.com and please drop us a note. And even if you just want to say hi, we'd love to hear from you, either in a comment or you can leave us a voice message while you're there. And also one last reminder, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, and we're on Twitter. All of them are at bizofkush. So let's connect. And with that, we're done for this week. Thanks again for investing some of your time listening this week. I know there's a lot of information out there, so we'll continue to do our best to serve this community by bringing you the right stuff so that you can continue growing and continue growing. Look forward to you joining us again next week. We'll see you.
You've been listening to The Business of Kush, the podcast for cannabis business owners, investors, and industry insiders. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to this podcast. It's easy to do by clicking on that subscribe button or follow button. And you can also follow us on social media at BizOfKush or visit us on the web at www.thegreenleafcpa.com/listen. We'll catch you in the next episode. And thanks again for listening to The Business of Kush.